If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.
As if they don't have too much on their plates, the Kings of Combat Sports Podcast, John and Wade, they talk about the things they did that day, the land of the work of Triple H.
Rewind to SmackDown,
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 Rewind to SmackDown.
And hello, everybody listening on the free side of things. This is Rewind to SmackDown. I'm Wei Ting, and I'm joined by my good friend, Neil Flanagan. Hello. Say hello, Neil, to everybody.
Hello, hello, free audience. Yes, and hello, my good friend, Wei Ting. John, busiest man in wrestling this weekend, covering TNA, Turning Point tonight. He'll be covering UFC on Sunday. So I'm in. I'm here.
Taking in. Of course, Neil and I just spent a good 35 minutes talking about today's top stories. Among them, and I think we're sparing John Pollock to privately deal with this, all right? But the return of SmackDown to 3 hours starting in January, this according to a report by
Russell Votes.
Russell Votes. Thank you very much. Yes, of course. So a lot of discussion about that and what it means for our lives and what it could mean positively for the show itself.
Yeah.
We also talk a little bit about the Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame and the inductions of CM Punk and Cody Rhodes, among others. Jim Ross health update, John Cena wrestling at Madison Square Garden this coming Monday, and some discussion about Mike Santana losing his TNA championship as part of last night's edition of Impact, and also a little bit about what at present point his status is at TNA Turning Point, which is going on right now. That podcast, that review, you will find for Post Wrestling Cafe members tomorrow morning. But I want to direct people's attention to something that's on the free feed right now that was initially released for Post Wrestling Cafe members, and that is John Pollock's excellent write-up and podcast about the death of Eddie Guerrero 20 years later. This is a long-form essay or whatever you want to call it, piece that John wrote, and he's been voicing a lot of these. It was initially released for the Post Wrestling Cafe. It's also out now on the free feed for people who want to just take a deeper dive into John Pollock's very well-researched discussion about the story of Eddie Guerrero, and in particular focusing on 20 years ago, the news of his passing. So those of you who want to check that out, go to your free feeds right now.
It's a tremendously well-written piece and tremendously well, obviously, as always, voiced piece as well. Mm-hmm. And I did want to just jump in there because I've seen a couple of comments saying, he's spelling Eddie wrong. John is not spelling Eddie wrong. That Eddie Guerrero, the man, rather than the kind of trademarked performer, went by E-D-D-Y. So yeah. I'll just...
This is actually, I don't think this is in the audio version, but it's at least in the written version. John actually writes here, now before we go any further, why E-D-D-Y instead of E-D-D-I-E? Mm-hmm. We rely on Guerrero's own words from his 2005 biography, Cheating Death and Stealing Life. I was billed as Eddie Gory Guerrero, E-D-D-Y, Gory Guerrero. Everybody wanted to see that last link to Gory Guerrero's tradition. My dad actually told me to spell my name E-D-D-Y. He knew that it would stand out more than the regular spelling I use today. Personally, I prefer the E-D-D-Y spelling. So there you go.
Meltzer's also talked about this a few times, that anytime Eddie wrote to him, he would sign off with that spelling.
Apparently his autograph is as well, which is a bit harder to decipher, but we've all been spelling it wrong is the answer.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, let's talk about tonight's edition of WWE SmackDown, Neil. This is from Albany, New York, the MVP Arena. Russell Tix had this at, well, close to 9,000 tickets distributed at the time of the show. And for comparison's sake, SmackDown from May 31st of 2024 was at 7,747 in the same building. So up from that one. We start things off with Rhea Ripley and Io Sky, of course, from Raw, but who cares, because it's War Games season and they are reacting to the announcement, or at least the challenge of War Games ending Monday night's edition of Raw. Rhea, of course, is in her face mask for her broken nose. She says that the Kabuki Warriors, Nia and Lash, think that they're untouchable, but with more numbers just means more enemies. Io says that they have nowhere to hide because it's War Games. So Rhea introduces their teammates, who are going to be Charlotte and Alexa, as expected. And they come out, they're hugging everybody. And it feels a little bit off, honestly, to see, certainly Charlotte and Rhea, you know, being somewhat friendly. And that will be addressed a bit later on. Mm. Alexa says that they started this fight, but we're going to end it. So they are in. Charlotte says that she can't pretend anymore. She tells Rhea that she doesn't like her and thinks she's a snake. There's too much history and too much bad blood between them, so you can count her out. She's off the team. And that's how the segment ends. So they're telling us a bit more of a drawn-out story for how we assume Charlotte will eventually make her way into the team. I'm glad they're at least telling us some sort of, you know, story about, like, this team coming together rather than just like, hey, we're all in the ring together. We have no real history, recent history with each other, but we're all in the ring. We're all looking in the same direction. Let's all be a team. I hope this, you know, deepens maybe our connection to the team as a whole and maybe builds our interest to the match itself.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, this, everybody knows that this competition between the two female sides of the War Games equation feels a little more thrown together than the men's side. So I think here's at least an attempt to kind of deepen the story. I will say, not to pile on, but I think Charlotte has never been the best promo. And I find this, you know, I can't do this. I don't like you, Rhea. I don't trust. It's hard to really buy into. It's compared to like Sammy later on, where with that fiery promo, or even Carmelo tonight, who you know, we'll get to all these segments. I really just find it difficult to buy into what she's selling, you know, on the mic.
I'll tell you something that I do notice, especially now that she's kind of been a babyface since she's come back. She smiles a lot. Like she's almost kind of like, you know, giddy. And like, I think that's somewhat like makes her a bit more likable. At the same time, like for a segment like this where she, number one, just lost these tag team championships. So mm-hmm. like her and Alexa didn't really sell the effects of like losing these championships whatsoever. Yes, Alexa was scripted to be mad. But like beyond that, I just didn't buy that they thought it was such a travesty. Like I watch this and I feel like, oh, they're ready to move on. They don't want these things back. They're certainly not challenging for them again. But like she comes out like all kind of like, you know, smiling, and I take it as a genuine smile. Like she's actually just having fun, but she then has to like get into acting mode, and it feels like a big contrast. And it's not the only time I've kind of felt that way about Charlotte's performances, but I guess like maybe in storyline, she's saying I can't pretend anymore. So maybe she was only pretending to smile that entire time.
Okay. Let's go with that.
I take it more the opposite. Like her smiling is her actual her, and her pretending is her trying to actually sell the storyline.
I think we kind of know that Ashley Fleer, because of the what's the name of the publication, the article that she wrote for Players Tribune. Yeah, thank you, Wei. I think this babyface run was something that she desired. And I think she genuinely enjoys the cheers and the wooing when she's coming out. Yeah. But I think you're right. Once she has to get into remembering lines mode, it's not wonderful. But, you know, you could say the same for Mercedes Moné. I think these are both really at the top of their game in ring female talents who perhaps are just not the best promos in the world. And when some lanes just don't work that well for them compared to others.
We continue the show and we've got Jey Uso. versus The Miz in the first match of the evening in our Last Time Is Now tournament. So Miz pretty much controls throughout the commercial break. He delivers a code breaker and a DDT for a two count. Miz then breaks into Cena's five moves of doom. He delivers the shoulder tackles, proto bomb, five knuckle shuffle. As he's about to go for the AA, Jay counters with the super kick. Jay then goes for a Samoan drop, but The Miz counters with the skull crushing finale for a two count. Miz then goes up top trying to set up an avalanche skull crushing finale. Jay turns this into like some form of like top rope Samoan drop where he drops The Miz, like almost guillotines him on the top ropes. He then delivers a spear and then the Uso splash to get the victory and advance. So what did you think about the match?
I quite enjoyed this, and it exceeded my expectations for a Miz-Jey Uso match, I have to say, when you know I knew this was obviously a build match, no mystery here. So, the spike DDT earlier as well, the vertical spike DDT, this is the move I always enjoy. It always impresses me because I know it's relatively safe. They do it a lot, and these guys doing it, you know, but it doesn't look safe. And it's one of those little bits of trickery of pro wrestling that still gets me. You know, when you see someone seemingly land vertically on their head and they're not, you know, but in that sense, but
it used to be only RVD that would like sell a DDT like that. Now, and I mean, plenty of people are, and we would see an even crazier version of that this evening.
Yeah, I think too that you know they're really sort of trying to get across how resilient Jay is, that he can kick out of that. He can kick out of a skull crushing finale, but in the end, Miz just succumbs to the Uso splash. You know, which is in character. That's fine.
Yeah, no surprise in this outcome. I mean, Jay is a main eventer. Miz is just kind of where he is at the moment. But I was happy at least to see. I mean, this is about as much involvement that we're going to see from The Miz in John Cena's final year. So I was at least happy to see this for what was once, I think, you know, like the WrestleMania rivalry. So maybe it says a whole lot about, like, just, again, Miz's current position in the company. Like, we acknowledge that there's history between them, but in no way do we want to push him to a level even near Jey Uso. But they, you know, Miz doing those Cena moves got a great reaction, got the crowd involved into the finish, and at least gave a little bit of a moment for Miz to acknowledge his history with Cena here. We go into the back with Nick Aldis and Ilya Dragunov, and DIY immediately interrupt. DIY and Ciampa complains about how Dragunov has been continuing to deny him a spot in the open challenge. Dragunov says that he promised to do this open challenge the right way, and that right way means to only face honorable challengers, and there's nothing honorable about Tommaso Ciampa. What's that logic? There's what? So, because he cheats.
They're trying very hard to get, I think, the label of jackass over here. It was mentioned over and over again in this backstage segment. So maybe they're trying to get a jackass chant going for Ciampa at some point. I don't really know. I mean,
like he Ilya gave a match to Gargano. So is Gargano somehow more honorable than Tommaso
Ciampa?
Yeah,
that's where I was about to go with this. You know, he has it in for Tommaso Ciampa in a way that you could argue is somewhat unfair if he's going to simply like give the shot to his tag team partner, who's just as bad, you might argue.
And this means he can only face baby faces, does it not?
Well, if this holds up, and I don't think it will, and it kind of goes against what an open challenge ought to be. Which is the point Ciampa's making to Nick Aldis. And
I'm on Ciampa's side. I'm on Ciampa's side.
Agree. An open challenge is sort of traditionally who gets, you know, who manages to run into Gorilla and say, play my music, and get their entrance.
Didn't he let Aleister Black challenge him like in his first week or something like that?
I think he's faced Black twice, has he not, in an open challenge?
Sammy, was it two times? There's a lot of wrestling. I thought once was Sammy. Was it not?
Could be, yeah.
Anyway, like what? The guy who, like, you know, spits, whose wife's threw fire paper, he threw fire paper at Damian Priest. There's honor in that. Make this make sense, Dragunov. Anyway, so tonight he is facing somebody he respects, and that is Axiom. So All right. All this is then greeted by Heyman in his office, who talks to him as we go to commercial break. We come back, and all this is with Heyman and Bronson Reed. Heyman brings up the War Games agreement that he has specifically drafted for all this to sign. And Heyman says that he has the ability to use any talent across all brands, including SmackDown. He repeats this specifically and says that this is just a heads up for Nick Aldis. Aldis says that this could have been an email and you didn't need to fly all the way here to tell me something that's already in the contract. So at this point, Cody shows up. Heyman wants to confront Cody about getting involved on Monday. Cody says, "You put my friends into the fire," which means I'm next in the flames. Cody says, "If you're not here to fight for my title, then get out of SmackDown." To which Bronson Reed steps up and says, "He'll fight." Cody then tells Aldis to make the match, to which Heyman says, "Why would you book the match and not make it for the championship?" And Cody tells Aldis to book it against Aldis's urging. So Cody gets his wish, and that means to give Bronson Reed a championship spot. Who needs this Royal Rumble coming up in Saudi Arabia? No, but yeah. You don't need to go there. Just show up in a room backstage, get your title shot. That is our main event for tonight, Cody versus Bronson Reed.
Goad your world champion or WWE champion, undisputed champion, and he will yell book it at the guy who can, and you're in. There's a few people that can get away with this sort of thing, including some of the verbiage. You put my Fred through the fire, that means I'm the next to walk through the flames, or whatever it is he says.
I love that.
Cody. Actually.
Cody did it. Yeah.
Cody is one of the few that is corny when I say it's corny when most people would say it. Cody gets away with it. And I think that's why no one should be in a rush to turn this guy, because he's a bit of a rarity in today's wrestling sort of landscape, where he can be pretty much the ultimate babyface and get away with verbiage and lines like this. And yeah, of course he's going to step up, you know.
Yes.
Under a challenge like this.
I guess so, man. I tend to think maybe Cody knew who was writing the show, and he knew that this would be a bullshit DQ finish anyway. So yes, you can put the title up for grabs, because I'm unlikely to have a clean finish in this match anyway.
I think a lot of us thought that when there was about 15 minutes left and we knew there was still a commercial to go, you know, when the entrances were coming. It was like, yes.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. It's November, which means holiday shopping season is officially here. Uncommon Goods takes the stress out of gifting with thousands of unique, high-quality finds that you won't see anywhere else. Their thoughtful curation makes shopping simple. But heads up, popular gifts sell fast, so now's a great time to start crossing those names off of your list. Uncommon Goods offers high-quality, unique items, like the New York Times custom baseball book, a made-to-order collection of historic newspaper pages featuring your favorite team's biggest games, star players, and memorable moments straight from the Times archives. You can even personalize it with a name for that extra special touch. Perfect for that baseball fan who might still need a bit of cheering up from their team's heartbreaking World Series Game 7 loss. Uncommon Goods has something for every kind of person. Book lovers, history buffs, foodies, gardeners. Shopping there supports small makers crafting limited-run handcrafted products. So don't wait. Cross those names off your list before the rush. For 15% off your next gift, head to uncommongoods.com/postwrestling. That's uncommongoods.com/postwrestling for 15% off. Uncommon Goods, we're all out of the ordinary.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
So we got Dragunov versus Axiom in our open challenge here. Dragunov goes for the H-bomb early, but it's countered with an armbar from Axiom. After a commercial break, Axiom counters with another flying armbar. Dragunov then again signals for the H-bomb, but Axiom catches Dragunov by his wrist, keeps his grasp as he jumps into a springboard, landing in a spectacular moonsault into a DDT, which Dragunov sells on the top of his head. This was incredible. Like AJ used to do this regularly into like an inverted DDT off of a moonsault, but this was even cooler, and the announcers just went nuts for it. It was amazing. Axiom then delivers a Spanish fly. He goes for the golden ratio, but Dragunov counters with the torpedo Moscow, followed by the H-bomb for the win. What did you think about the match?
Really good, and I knew it would be. I will say the crowd didn't seem particularly into this at the beginning, and I did feel like they took a beat or two, maybe too, if I'm being picky, they maybe took a beat or two too long to really get the pace up on this match compared to the match with Nathan Fraser, for example. But by the time the crowd were up and at him and the moves that you just described were being hit, that, you know, this was great. I think I maybe just preferred the breakneck pace right from the bell of the Fraser match, but I knew this would be good, and it, of course it was.
I agree with you about the crowd. I mean, this was probably hindered by their lack of star power relative to maybe even The Miz and Jey Uso here. But, I mean, they certainly got them with their work, in particular after that, like, incredible moonsault into that DDT from Axiom. As these sort of showcase matches go, I mean, you know, guys like Axiom and Frazier and Javon Evans always impress in these sort of scenarios. And they did that here. So eventually, well, hopefully it means, well, it will lead to something tag team related for him, of course. But I think for Dragunov, Sammy was great. But I certainly don't miss Sammy, you know, because Dragunov has been just as compelling to watch as one of these champions. And if we're talking about maybe long-term build and value for one of these things, they're doing a great job of giving Ilya Dragunov that spotlight and making him this sort of like presence and making him known for being a guy who delivers incredibly compelling in-ring quality.
Yeah, this idea that... this notion you can put into viewers' heads, that Ilya is going to be on the show every week and he's going to really deliver in ring. You're going to get at least one banger on this show. Mm-hmm. I like it too. And I think it's still, he still feels fresh because he was gone for quite a while. Despite his logical lapses about, you know, who he can give, what an open challenge actually is, etc. These matches have been great.
Yeah. And the move to 3-hour shows pretty much assures, I think, this open challenge staying in some form. And they've done a great job of establishing it as the championship where you can expect a high-quality match every show. I hope the tag team titles will join it at some point in the next 6 months. Let's go to Aldis and R-Truth in the back, where R-Truth says he's ready to use his balls in the John Cena tournament. And, of course, we get a lot more ball jokes, so... They're paying this man a lot of money, evidently, for some of these bald jokes. I hope they all consider it worthwhile. Chelsea Green appears. She asks why she didn't get pyro when she won the U.S. title last week. She's mad that she had her U.S. title celebrations canceled, but she'll forgive Aldis if he makes it for next week, to which Aldis says, I think we can make that happen. Just hold these balls.
Yeah. Which he does, balls. And then we get one more balls joke with... how nice the balls are, whose balls they are, etc.
I laughed so hard at this. I thought this was just
the sophistication of this comedy is
balls.
I know, can you imagine?
They're like testicles, you know, you get it?
Oh, yeah, incredible.
This was great. Elimination Chamber.
I saw South Park this week, and this was on a higher level of comedy.
I kind of missed out on the chatter around South Park. What was so special about this week's episode?
It revolved largely around AI generated video and the kids sort of pranking each other with this to the most extreme degrees. So other cartoon characters like Popeye, Droopy Dog, the Studio Ghibli producers arrive from Japan and they're furious and. It was absolutely hilarious. The news parts of it were kind of the more kind of the White House stuff they've been doing with J.D. Wow. Vance and Trump get it on this week. But that was, to me, that was not nearly the funniest part of the show. I just thought it was absolutely on a new level.
I think WWE needs to start moving into some of this. Like, they need to use Sora to create some of these backstage segments to maybe make them a bit more interesting, you know? Looking forward to Tupac making balls jokes for the John Cena tournament. All right. Elimination Chamber is going to be taking place in Chicago's United Center in February. During the commercial, we see Tommaso Ciampa beating the shit out of Axiom as Nathan Frazer drives them away. So next week, DIY versus Fraxium in a tag team match. Sami Zayn comes out. He says he's had a lot of highs and lows on SmackDown. He beat Solo for the U.S. Championship. He got to wrestle John Cena in his last SmackDown match, and that was great. But the last 4 weeks have sucked for him since he's been injured. He couldn't do anything while the MFTs attacked his friends, but that ends tonight. So the MFTs come out. Solo calls Sami desperate. He says he's selfish. He says he only cares about himself, but Solo cares about his family. You know nothing about loyalty to family, and presumably this is, of course, all in reference to their bloodline days together. Solo threatens to have the MFTs attack Sami while he's still injured, but says he's going to wait until Sami is cleared and good to go. Sami says, well, you don't have to wait because I'm cleared as of tonight, so do something about that right now. But Sami says he also did not come alone, and out come the Motor City Machine Guns, Shinsuke Nakamura, and Rey Fénix to back Sami up, leaving him alone with Solo Sikoa, leaving Sami alone with Solo. Solo avoids a Huluva kick, but a big brawl ensues with everybody. Rey Fénix delivering a huge tornado to the MFTs on the outside. Unfortunately, really caught by nobody here. Graves says Sami and company may have staved off a Matanza tonight, as of course. A bit of a Lucha Underground reunion here between Jeff Cobb and Rey Fénix here. So we get another 5-on-5 feud, really the other 5-on-5 feud that is concurrently being built on, at least SmackDown right now. And later on, Aldis is with Solo Sikoa. Solo wants a match with Sami, but Aldis says they don't have time tonight because I just booked the main event here with Cody Rhodes and Bronson Reed. So instead, Aldis makes this a 5-on-5 traditional Survivor Series match for the week before, well, the go home show before Survivor Series.
Yeah,
yeah.
Nicely built in record time, all beginning with a pretty great promo from Sami. I thought he's so good at this, the fiery fighting back underdog, baby face. I did wonder at the end. Where's this just feels very like a. Another War Games match? What are they going to have another one?
And these guys? No, I'm sorry. There's no way the Fénix and the Motor City Machine Guns and Nakamura are getting into that.
No, but it'll be nice to see the sort of throwback traditional elimination style match, yeah. I guess. Where are the Wyatt Six, who were, I think, in the MFT's radar, but we don't know. And I don't care at the moment.
Yeah, I like that they are keeping the traditional 5-on-5 Survivor Series match as just a TV special. You know, it was maybe worthwhile at one point, but it's lost its luster now for like more than 20 years. But there's still maybe some attraction to it as they sort of prelude to War Games, and for a B-level feud, yes, why not? You know, maybe this will attract some interest. Maybe some. Getting the Motor City Machine Guns out of like the tag team sort of like nether realm of like bad sketches. Although of course the Tongans are still involved in all of this and that could probably lead to a tag team feud onto themselves. Also Fénix and Nakamura are also a tag team. So there you go too. By the way,
which begs the question, what do you do with Sami Zayn after all of this is over? Because I've long been a big fan of him, and I'd love him to one day get that world title run, with either of the bigger titles. And I just think after all of this is done with, I'm not sure where you slot him. He's not in any title picture of any kind, but I feel like he's too big a deal.
Yeah.
To the fans at large to be just this mid-card dude, who's having random matches on SmackDown each week. So we shall see, in the run-up to Rumble season, I guess, with all of that. But
I feel like we've had several teased opportunities. And by the end, like, we're ending this year with me, like, not really being sure about their plans for Sami Zayn being an eventual world champion. But we had several teases, like, you know, dating back to Jey Uso being a champion. I think that would have been a perfect path for Sami to eventually turn heel, or at least not even turn heel, but just challenge, well, his best friend, or one of his best friends, for the championship. We even got that great tease with just Sami sort of lingering as Jey was, like, celebrating and watching on, that I'm positive was intentional. They never followed up on that. Jey just lost the championship, and then we just kind of separated them and they moved on. I would have also sworn that, like, this U.S. title run, giving him, like, a, you know, like, Gunther style run with this championship would have been their way of getting him hot enough so that he would eventually challenge maybe Cody for the championship. Yep. That's been pretty much severed at this point. It's been 4 weeks, and of course he's been injured, but I just don't get that sense at all. He's, like, continuing a feud with Solo Sikoa, nowhere near the title picture. So I wonder, like, it seems like Cody has much bigger fish to fry, you know?
Certainly. And I feel like the, you know, the next stop after, you know, this traditional 5-on-5 match is probably Sami and Solo down the road at something else, you know? So, I'd like to see him move on up from this, maybe even back to Raw. I think he might have a better role there.
Yeah, we'll see, man. I should also mention the Wyatt glitch appeared, and we saw Uncle Howdy in the background. So just teasing some sort of Wyatt bullshit thing, you know, with all these tag teams that are involved in this Survivor Series match. Jey is with Cody backstage. Jey says he's got Cody's back in his match tonight against Bronson Reed. Jimmy shows up and says, "I got your back too." Jimmy also says, "Count me in for War Games." So we have four members of the babyface team thus far in Cody, CM Punk, Jey, and Jimmy. Do you get the sense that it's, well, it's four on each side by the end of this show, and they're likely to announce one more?
The announcers, I think, at some point said it's traditionally five. You know, we will see at some point during the show. They mentioned that. So Roman seems to be the obvious on the obvious missing person on the babyface side of things. I thought this was
and for the heels, the rumored name is Brock Lesnar. Of course.
Yes, and we got Lesnar and McIntyre, and we got I think we knew McIntyre. Well, not new, but
no Austin Theory. But I think we're okay with that.
Yeah. I did feel like, you know, the entrance of Jimmy into things was a wee bit kind of, I talked to Punk and I'm in. You know, was a bit nothingy, but. Who cares?
It's sort of the expected one. Like, not much work do you have to do to explain Jimmy Uso being in it, I don't think. All right. So Brian in the chat says at the end of the show they said it's 5-on-5. So I'll take Brian's word for that. Yes. Yep. Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MC Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. That's chopped-tees.com/post-wrestling.
Hello. Braden Harrington here from Up Next. You can catch us live every Tuesday here at Post Wrestling as we cover NXT. But if you search Poison Rana in your YouTube or podcast app or social media of choice, you can check out all the other wrestling content that we create, podcasts, and so much more. Visit poisonrana.ca and keep it lit.
So we got LA Knight versus a mystery opponent in the Last Time Is Now challenge, and O Radio, tell me everything you know. It is Zack Ryder who showed up here, not in Madison Square Garden, but in Albany, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just as I'm sure he'll take it, you know.
Okay? Oh, he'll take it.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll take it. This is his first WWE match in 5.5 years. I thought he looked a bit emotional for his entrance here. Did you feel that way?
I did too. I thought the pop he got was very good, but not certainly people weren't losing their minds or anything like that. But he's Zack Ryder. He's not, you know, a returning, like, mega legend, you know. But yeah, I think I'm sure a main roster walk down that ramp is going to be emotional for him after 5.5 years. NXT, he has been on NXT, but it's not the same thing, you know, down at the Performance Center. So to be, you know, on the road here.
he looked even emotional walking into the crowd in NXT. So yeah, like we know how much this guy's wanted to come back. He's been very public about that. Are you surprised or disappointed that he didn't get a New York City return, MSG return?
I just wonder, and it goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the show, who they have lined up for Cena on Monday. And we're drawing a blank as to who that could be that's going to have real name value.
I would have thought his spot was the Sheamus surprise opponent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to get into that NYC show. Yeah. Interesting anyway, but we'll get into the match, I guess. But I think he's certainly emotional here. Yeah.
So I think he would have got a great reaction in New York. At the same time, WWE must have somebody bigger to use for a show that big. Maybe they consider the stage too big to give to somebody who maybe they don't intend on having beyond this, but we'll see. So this is Cardona's first match in WWE in 5.5 years. Graves says this is not the same Zack Ryder. He's reinvented himself with death matches. Cole says, I think I saw this guy a few weeks ago in NXT. And Graves says, I think they called him something else, but never mind. Crowd gives him a good reaction. They do the woo woo woo. After a commercial, Ryder connects pretty hard on a broski boot to LA Knight here. Ryder then connects with the Rough Rider, getting a two count. The BFT is countered with a schoolboy for a two count. He then goes for a top rope Rough Rider, but Knight counters it with the power bomb, and then he hits the BFT for the victory. And gotta say, Neil, on paper, like, Zack Ryder versus LA Knight is not necessarily, I mean, they're both guys who I would say are more known for their personality than their like heavyweight in ring style.
Yep.
But I thought the match exceeded my expectation. And I think so much of it, was due to the novelty of seeing Zack Ryder keeping this crowd engaged. I thought the work for the time that they had, I thought was pretty decent. And especially with the finish, I thought, which looked pretty good as well.
The cynic in me, once Zack had made his entrance, was, here are two archetypal WWE style in-ring guys. This is going to be super patterned, super predictable. And on one level, it was that. It was a very old school WWE match with two very well matched, if you like, opponents. Mm-hmm. But it was a really, really good example of that. And I think certainly by the end of the match as well, I think you're right. Things were, the counters, the moves, they were complementing each other extremely well. They had quite a lot of chemistry. By the end, I had my mind changed. I thought, this was a very good example of this kind of match from two guys who are sort of well-versed in it.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
It makes total sense.
Boring, but it wasn't.
No, it makes total sense. Like you mentioned, this is very much two sort of quintessential, maybe 2010s, maybe late 2000s WWE guys, like two guys that are like jacked and built and not necessarily doing like 450s or anything like that. But I would still say I was very entertained enough by them doing this. And maybe for me, it's just like when I'm watching SmackDown, I'm not expecting every match to look like Axiom versus Ilya Dragunov. I kind of have a different standard, and I'm maybe more so measuring the crowd's engagement, which I thought they were for this one. Mm-hmm. And I just thought overall, like, this was an engaging, entertaining match. At the end of this, do you see a role for Zack Ryder in the WWE?
I could, particularly if, as we expect, SmackDown goes to 3 hours. He could be a good addition to the mid-card of this show. I think it's worth noting that Zack Ryder is 40, and that's not old at all in today's landscape. In fact, LA Knight is 3 years older than that. So it's not like he's washed. He has his style. He can kind of be another LA Knight. I don't think he's as good a promo. He doesn't have as big an aura, if you like. But the two of them are, like, they're kind of well matched in a lot of ways. in this match, in their build, in the way they wrestle. I think there's a place for a Zack Ryder, yeah.
Mm-hmm. As the chat room is letting us know, they are currently selling Zack Ryder merch at WWEshop.com. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if this necessarily confirms anything. Like, they did the same with the Hardys when they had, like, the NXT appearances. I mean, it confirms that they are happy to make money off of this guy. And for them, I don't know if it costs more than just like sending a Photoshop file to the printers to say like, hey, like this, like we got this design. We got some new designs even. Can you make some money for us? And there you go. But I do think, depending on how much merch he sells, how hot this is, it might be a selling point for him to make that argument about getting a new contract. Certainly when we look at like some of these recent hires, like fucking Tonga Loa has a job in this company, and I hate the rag on this guy, but like,
yeah,
it shows that if there's a spot, if there's a role for you, if there's a character for you, if you fit into a storyline, well, you can be brought on. And I see Cardona's path to be Chelsea Green. Like, I just think like Chelsea is a principal character right now. Yep. in the women's division in this company. And I'm kind of excited to see what she would and her real life husband would be able to do on screen together. I think they'd have so much fun together. Now, I've said similar about Chelsea Green with Ethan Page. She kind of has like a male, you know, counterpart right now already. Yeah. I thought that they would be taking that to the main roster as an act. It's been several weeks now. That doesn't seem to be happening. It seems to be strictly an NXT thing, AAA thing. But eventually down the line, a Chelsea and Zach, some sort of duo, I think would be a lot of fun to watch.
Hmm. Look, Ethan was there for Chelsea's win on SmackDown. So there was that, which led me down the same sort of path that you're talking about, Wei. But I could see the two, the real couple here together. And I agree with you that there are several routes in any wrestling company, particularly this one. You know, you've got a Tala Tonga who's very limited in the ring, but he's very tall. So he gets a spot. You've got Tangaloa, who even in his Gorillas of Destiny days, I don't think was very good, you know, as someone who was New Japan trained. And yeah, I'm ragging on him again, but it's kind of
I love
true.
Him for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, it's that. And there is always the sort of mid-card good hand. And Zach has that like written all over him. He does have his fans that are still around. He's kind of well-liked. I think he's never burned a bridge. I think, you know, they're not taking on anyone who's going to cause any issues backstage, all of that. So that is all working in his favor. And the fact that they've, as Triple H reminded us, so many hours of TV to fill, and Saturday night's main events and PLEs. And I don't think Zach will be on any PLEs, but he can certainly have a spot on a 3-hour SmackDown somewhere.
And I don't know if this means anything. I don't know if it means much more than just, you know, playing to the internet, but we got Paul Levesque doing a pointing photo with Zack Ryder.
Look at those teeth.
At the end of this. Oh,
my great takeaway is the fluorescence of Cardona's teeth.
He must use white strips, Crest white strips. Yeah?
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, Matt Cardona, you know, do you guys want to see him back in the WWE? I mean, I think much of the audience demand will determine it. So, wait, what did Levesque here post here? Triple H also tweeted, you never know who might show up in the Last Time Is Now tournament. It's all about opportunity, and Matt Cardona proved that tonight. At the Matt Cardona proved that tonight. So, there you go. Very interesting. The boyhood dream might be back. Let's go to Alexa, who is in the back with Io and Rhea Ripley. Alexa says Charlotte isn't responding to her texts. Rhea seems to be giving up on her and says that they now have to find two other people for their team. Alexa is trying to encourage her to give it just a little bit more time. When here come the Kabuki Warriors, Lash Legend and Nia Jax to storm them with a big sneak attack. I thought specifically highlighting Lash Legend with a big right hand to Rhea Ripley here. So they continued to beat them down, big pull apart. But I thought a good little spotlight specifically on Lash in this beatdown.
Yeah, and I think like of late, since she's arrived, and that's only maybe three TVs, certainly in this recent main roster run, Last Legend has looked really good. It's presented as a bit of a monster, a potential opponent for, you know, a potential rival for Jade at some point even, you know. Mm-hmm. She's got that kind of stature, and I mean that, you know, both physically and the way she presents herself on television. I just think she's got it, you know. She's got that that X factor. And yeah, even the chemistry with Nia, I think, is pretty good. You know, if you set it to alongside Alexa and Charlotte, for example, I think some of the little segments we've seen with them, you know, when she first arrived on SmackDown even, were, you know, eclipsing what Alexa and Charlotte have been able to do on camera. So, yeah, Lash Legend, I'm all about her. She's great.
Yeah, I'm into this. And I'm more so interested in seeing what this sort of combination brings out of each other's personalities. I mean, I think Nia's been doing a good job on her own, but the Tiffany Stratton pairing never, to me, like, worked that well as just an entertaining duo. This feels like it's two bullies getting together and doing bully shit, and I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what they bring out of each other.
Yeah, they're mean girling it in a very convincing way, you know, with a smile. I like that. It's working well.
Let's go to Jade versus B-Fab here. Don't believe this is not a title defense. No, B-Fab really should have just visited. Well, like, too bad Nick Aldis wasn't there. You know, this would have been a title match. So B-Fab starts with a lot of big drop kicks and boots. By the way, our favorite wrestler on Rewind of SmackDown.
The moment for us. The gray hoodie, hat wearing, glasses wearing twins.
Yes,
we are.
Sadly, this was not the night for B-Fab, and she will have to wait to finish her story, so to speak. But we got Jade Cargill, B-Fab. B-Fab starts with a lot of big drop kicks and boots. Jade stops her fall away slam, choke slam, power bomb. Now, what was interesting and notable about this one was that Jade would pause after each one of these moves, and she would tell B-Fab to stay down, as if she was trying to win by standing 10 count. Was that it?
I guess. Or, you know. Yeah. You hear wrestlers yelling, stay down. You know, it's kind of like.
But in the context of a match, why? Like, she didn't even go for a cover. She's like, stay down. Recover.
Yeah. I think she just wants to dominate by having her lie there for 10 seconds. I don't know.
That would be quite the way to beat your opponent. But I guess KO, knockout, right?
TKO, I guess, if your opponent is choosing through fear not to get up.
Choosing to stay down. Interesting. Okay, well, she delivers one more powerbomb, and the crowd chants, of course, one more time because they're loving this heel beatdown of a baby face nobody cares about. Finally, she delivers Jade for the victory, and afterwards, Meechan shows up, faces off with Jade, and I'm sorry, Meechan, you're next. So yeah, they seem to be starting like a new, we'll see how long it goes, but they seem to be at least starting a new streak for Jade. Jade even says, who's next, as she walks up the ramp. So I like it. What do you think?
I like it too. I mean, this is what it should be. This match was what it needed to be, a squash of B-Fab. I would have gone even further and not allowed any selling for Jade in that she had to sort of take in the beginning, you know, the couple of drop kicks, the high kick to the head and the elbows right at the beginning. Dispense with that even, you know, just let B-Fab get squashed without any offense. Do the same next week with Meechan. And yeah, let's run up a nice streak for this absolutely dominant heel Jade, who is that bitch.
Yes. So, I mean, in AEW, obviously, like, I think the thing she was most known for was having that Goldberg type of streak. We're revisiting that now, essentially, but we're doing it with a Jade that is a lot more experienced. And I think at this point, maybe a lot more capable of delivering something that's a bit more dynamic than, like, at that time, it felt like that was all she was able to do in AEW. And so we were just going to only book her in squash matches. here, I'm not saying like she's improved so much more dramatically, but at least like she has several years of like, you know, consistent in-ring performances on TV, on PLEs. She can work longer matches doing both selling and also looking dominant. So I'm a lot more confident about things this time around. It's a much bigger spotlight, obviously, but I think they're doing this right, you know? Like this is their second chance at pushing Jade as a truly dominant threat. And as a heel, I mean, this Goldberg thing, I think, works perfectly for her. So, but yeah, I didn't understand the whole standing 10 count thing. I think she needed to just beat the shit out of BFAP and just like get out. So
yeah, I feel like it could have been more dominant,
but this totally babyfaces her, doesn't it?
Of course, we're going to get the one more time stuff.
Yeah, until she runs up against the heel, or sorry, a babyface that the crowd likes even more. And I'm curious if Bianca Belair is that babyface whenever she recovers from this injury. Or does the crowd cheer Jade over Bianca by this point? I don't know.
Yeah. I wonder at this point, particularly at this point in the year, with Survivor Series kind of set, and then Cena's last match, they might be just holding Bianca back for the Rumble at this stage, perhaps, you know? That's total speculation on my part. That's not my news gathering mode at all. But I think that it just feels like that might be the way to make, you know, we all love a good return at the Rumble. And I feel like at this stage, that may be the way to go halfway through November.
She's waiting for the 3-hour era to come back. She's not working a 2-hour show. No. Are you kidding me?
Come on.
This month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, Rewind Away looks at some of the biggest retirement matches in wrestling history, featuring matches involving Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Sting, and Tam Nakano. Plus, John Pollock and Brandon from New Jersey get together to look back at season 4 of 90210, a season that brought you John Sears, Lucinda Nicholson, David's meth addiction, and Brandon moving in on Kelly Taylor. Book Club will cover This Book Is All Elite by Keith Elliott Greenberg. Plus, we have reviews of TNA Turning Point, UFC 322, and so much more. $6 gets you all this at postwrestlingcafe.com.
All right, so we've got Carmelo Hayes in the back. He's with Kathy Kelly. Thank you. Carmelo says, well, Kelly says, Carmelo, you've been very upfront about you grew up idolizing John Cena. And Carmelo says, I want to be the one to hang his jersey on the rafters. And if I get that shot, I won't miss. At this point, Bronson Reed walks up, who of course is Carmelo Hayes' opponent next week in the tournament. He says, I'm going to end Cody Rhodes. Then I'm going to end John Cena's career after I end you next week. So, kind of 0-1 already on that checklist, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. I thought this was a good promo from Melo, who is a good promo, generally speaking. And I'm kind of glad that he said he's not done with The Miz at the beginning of this, because that's clearly the direction he's going in after next week. As much as I like him and I want them to do more with him, he's not going to win that tournament match next week.
No, I don't think so either. Well, we got Zelina Vega and Aleister Black here. And Aleister Black recounts all the ways that Damian Priest has tried to kill him during their feud, and says that Priest is the one who fears. He fears what they have made him become. Zelina says that when they started this, they said that they would corrupt him, and they did exactly that. Black then turns his attention to Cody, who says he finally became the thing that nobody wanted him to become. And that is everyone's enemy. Sorry, Black was saying that about himself, right?
Yeah.
Or was he saying that about Cody?
No, about himself.
Oh, okay. Right, yes. So this confirms that Black and Cody is continuing after their non-finish last week.
I guess.
Any interest, any thoughts? Give me your 10-minute analysis on this.
10 minutes? I mean, this is just a reminder, because these two weren't on the show, that they're still part of the SmackDown roster on a week when there's so many Raw talent sort of popping up. I still think together they're good together. I still laugh at Zelina being a snake and doing all those mannerisms in the entrance. But it's a good presentation. He's a good heel. He's a tremendous wrestler. I don't know. There's something about this is a bit naff, and I think what it takes is him to get past Priest. We need that to be over with. The Damian Priest feud has got to be done with, yeah. And he's not going to unseat Cody as champion. So what he's really needing is a new program, I think. Who that is, don't know. But, you know, that's where he needs to get to pretty soon.
Yeah. So I'll certainly say I think Aleister Black has been maybe a more consistent presence on my television since he's come back to the WWE. But in terms of just, like, being an intimidating force and like, somebody with, like, a greater aura, Malakai Black completely dwarfs this Aleister Black, in my opinion. Like, Malakai Black, even though he didn't partake in like a huge number of title matches or like main events or all that, I could buy him being in a main event the next day simply because he never did jobs. They were so incredibly dominant with him, and he was so much more mysterious, you know. And this is me complaining about like his promos being too mysterious, but at the same time, like, his WWE run has kind of positioned him firmly into the mid card, where I just don't really fear him at all, and it's not like being attached to his wife that's any sort of issue. In fact, I think it helps the presentation, as you've mentioned, but they've just kind of really taken the bite off of like the character, in my opinion, and that probably has been due to like this sort of endless run. Endless series with like Damian Priest, the shit with R-Truth that did not belong some of with that this character at all.
Some of that backstage stuff was grim, very bad.
Yeah. Anyway, so that is the ongoing Aleister Black saga. Expect a rematch with Cody Rhodes coming up. But speaking of Cody Rhodes, we have our main event tonight. It is a WWE Championship match between Bronson Reed and Cody Rhodes. And of course, Bronson Reed just dominates through the commercial break. I think we had, about like 10 to 15 minutes left over in the show?
Yeah, somewhere between 10 and 15.
So Reed goes for the tsunami. Cody avoids. He delivers the Cody cutter for a two count. They continue fighting on the floor when Cody is about to clear the announce table. But out come Bron Breakker and Logan Paul to attack, causing yet another disqualification to end a Cody Rhodes main event on SmackDown. The Usos come out for the save. Listen, I got to talk about this. Obviously, not only is it incredibly unsatisfying to watch, but logically, how does it make sense that Paul Heyman and Bronson Reed are gifted a free championship match without having to do any of the work for it, and they intentionally cause their own faction to be disqualified, losing out on this opportunity?
Yeah. At the same point, I was going to bring up just this incredible gap in logic where they goad the champion and arguably the most prestigious championship on both brands into putting the title up. And instead of in some way helping him win, they clearly interfere in a way that is going to cause a disqualification. And that just doesn't make any sense. I don't care how you try to shake it up, as you know, how could War Games, as even though that's the next PLE and we're all leading up to that, be more important than getting the title onto one of your stable? Makes no sense.
It's beyond that like gap in logic, and maybe Heyman will come up with some bullshit explanation, which I don't even know what you could say. Like, what could Heyman say? We have our sights. We have a long-term vision. All right. We have our sights set for something bigger with you. So we need Cody to keep the championship. We never wanted the championship. We just wanted to throw you off your game. They'll bullshit something like that. That might satisfy some people, but I just think it's so stupid. It still sucks. And just not to mention like the bitter taste you leave in your audience's mouths by trying to, you didn't even have to build this as a title match. They did so anyway, just because I guess it might attract a few more eyeballs, a few more attention, but suckers, like, haha, like we tricked you into tuning in for this. All you're doing is continuing to like maybe weather the faith that your audiences have in your billing. I thought this was so weak. 2 weeks in a row.
I feel like there was really no need whatsoever for the goading into the title match part of this, and it would have made total sense if it hadn't been a title match, because then it's just a throwaway match. You know, they just want to beat Cody up and weaken him ahead of the War Games match. That makes sense. But to intentionally rob one of your crew of a title chance just is bizarre to me. And if it was to try and spike an audience for the end of the show, then it's just silly, you know, because no one, I don't think anyone expected a title change. So, and I think everyone pretty much expected the rest of the heel War Games team to emerge at some point.
Yeah.
Well, and while we've got the critics' hats on, I really didn't particularly love Bron Breakker being, yeah, no, we've got our
minus
blue
gray
hoodies, our glasses. I didn't really love Breakker being dispensed with so easily by the Usos either, you know, as a guy who's like really on the up. A couple of super kicks seems to like, you know, just take him out.
Didn't take him out for that long.
I did guess. Come
back.
Yeah.
Because there was more to go here because we find out who the fourth man is in our War Games team, because out comes a suspended Drew McIntyre. How? He's suspended. How is this possible? Well, all this comes out. He's really mad and he complains to Paul Heyman, and Heyman, of course, reminds him that you said anybody on the roster is eligible. So that, of course, means Drew McIntyre is back after a teased hiatus here. The crowd, of course, is chanting CM Punk, but CM Punk is not here today. You're going to have to wait for Monday for that. Breakker spears Jay through the table. Claymore is delivered to Cody. Tsunami is delivered to Cody. Heyman then hands Drew the contract, which seemingly confirms that he is the fourth man on this War Games team. So currently we've got Logan Paul, Bron Breakker, Bronson Reed, Drew McIntyre on one side, CM Punk, Jay Uso, it's Jimmy Uso, and Cody Rhodes on the other side.
Yeah. Some OTC chants here as well toward the end. I'm sorry, the guys, thank you. Roman's not going to appear at the tail end of SmackDown, but I think he's going to round out the field for this.
He's not going to Albany. You kidding me?
He will be rounding out the field for the face.
I could see him for Monday, like for MSG. Mm-hmm. You know, it's such a big show.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah.
I almost expect it, in fact. For Madison Square Garden, and even maybe Lesnar.
Yes. So, you know, the show I thought ended rather poorly. Was not at all a fan of either, like, really anything. Like, the whole, like, the Drew back and forth, teasing the suspension, only to just, like, cancel it the next week. I thought it was maybe okay at best, but certainly like not so clever that like I'm raving about it. Yeah. I hated the non-finish to the Cody match 2 weeks in a row, just so unsatisfying as for somebody who chooses to invest 2 hours. Like, what a great advertisement for a 3-hour show. Tune in for like more of this. So I thought that all was pretty weak. But I thought there were some good things on the show. Like, Zack Ryder was certainly a highlight, you know, in my opinion. What were your highlights of the show?
I quite like the general fact that we were getting the I know we joke about the hall pass a lot, but right at the get go from the show, that, you know, Cole said, you know, and you can expect to see Raw talent showing up here because in the next couple of weeks, because we're in the run up to Survivor Series War Games, which is, you know, a co-branded thing. The last time is not a tournament.
They're all code-branded things, though.
Well, I guess, yeah. And he also mentioned, you know, that the tournament being, you know, talents from both brands and stuff. So at least we got a little bit of an explanation from the announcer desk about why you can, you know, you can expect to see these people.
But and then you got Bronson Reed, who's like, I guess he's in War Games, but that also makes him eligible for the championship too.
I think just showing up makes you eligible, doesn't it?
Right.
If you've got the pass, you know.
Of course.
I mean, but I thought it was an entertaining episode. I'm with you on the both the main event itself, and which was on one hand really predictable that you were going to get the, you know, the at least the what we have right now of the two War Games teams fighting at the end. I thought that was always going to be the destination of this show. But the way they chose to do it with a title match was just, I really didn't like that. And the way that that match ended also was just stupid. Mm-hmm. But apart from that, Zack Ryder, I enjoyed that. I kind of, the open challenge with Ilya was fantastic. Good. I liked Sammy's promo and the setup for that match too, and for what it's worth. Maybe not so much the Flair, the Alexa, you know, the women's side of the War Games thing with Flair taking herself out of the team temporarily. But like we mentioned earlier, that is a device to kind of just try to deepen that story a wee bit because it doesn't have any depth.
So my opinion on the War Games build is that it's still pretty lukewarm. Like, I don't think they're giving us the greatest of explanations or even like heat building moments to like make me really want to see the match, but they are doing all the necessary steps and laying the pieces out there and maybe giving, for the most part, some justification for everybody to appear. I continue to enjoy Jade Cargill's push as this like Goldberg like character, gave a decent little spotlight to Lash Legend in the backstage brawl as well. So some like decent little sort of like small building pieces there. Great match in Axiom versus Dragunov. Beyond that, I don't know if I'd recommend that much on the show. So those are our thoughts, everybody. And thank you at this point for everybody who's tuning in live. We always encourage you to like and subscribe. But if you really like us, consider signing up at the Post Wrestling Cafe, where for $6 a month, you get access to our entire archive of bonus content. As we mentioned, this week we had Ask Away, where John and I spent about, 100 minutes. I'm trying to do the math in my head. An hour and 40 minutes.
I was going to say it was an hour and 40 something,
100 minutes answering all of our patrons' questions. I believe we dropped a 15-minute preview of it on the free feed as well, if you wanted a little bit of a snippet. Also on the free feed, as we mentioned, listen to John Pollock's whole write-up about Eddie Guerrero in podcast form. Later on this month in the Post Wrestling Cafe, we have our edition of Rewind Away, where we'll be talking about Transformers the movie. Neil, were you a Transformers guy?
Yes, largely because I was actually even slightly too old, really. Because I guess in the 80s is Transformers at their height. Mm-hmm. I was born in 73, so I was into it. I liked the toy. The original toys were amazing because they were little works of art. They were die-cast metal, at least in part. And the real concentration when they first came out was on making these look absolutely indistinguishable from a toy truck or a toy fighter plane or whatever Starscream and Optimus Prime and all these people you'll be watching were. The robots themselves then looked sometimes a bit clunky. But I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the original cartoon so much that I actually went to the cinematic presentation of
this movie?
The anniversary of it. No, it wasn't the movie. It was of the animated series, which... only a year or two before the movie, I guess. And in the cinema, they showed Arrival from Cybertron, which was the pilot episode, and some of the other early episodes, and then did a table read and a chat with some of the surviving cast. Some of them are not with us anymore. So
I feel I know so much more about you just by asking you that question. And we will continue to dive into maybe the culture of Transformers, the original animated series, in our discussion about this movie coming up on Rewind Away very soon. I believe next week, actually. So tune in for that as well. In the Post Wrestling Cafe in the morning, by the time most of you will be listening to this, is John Pollock's TNA Turning Point review. Let's see how they handled that title situation at the very end with Mike Santana. And then later on Sunday, John will be back with our UFC 322 review with Eric Marcotte. And on Sunday as well, on Saturday, we got Bruce and Kate on Collision Course, also in the Post Wrestling Cafe. Sunday on the free feed, it's the return of the NWA podcast. So at this point, we bid farewell to all of our free feeders, and we go to form.postwrestling.com to talk about your feedback and questions.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This month at PostWrestlingCafe.com, go XL, and you get live editions of Rewind to Raw, Rewind to Dynamite, and Rewind to SmackDown, featuring all the news of the day, your questions and answers, as well as feedback. PostWrestlingCafe.com, $6 gets you in the door.